that time again. Welcome to Blind Line. It's a Thursday afternoon here in New Zealand anyway, and it's a beautifully sunny day. Hope it's just as nice where you are on ACB Radio Mainstream. Live, and of course this is the new Blind Line time. We're now even healthier than before, less preservatives, no additives, and completely cholesterol free. On the program between now and the next couple of hours, we are going to be speaking with Phil Troll in just a moment. He's from the National Talking Express in Britain, and they're also working on some interesting plans that we'll find out about regarding radio for the print impaired, so we'll look at that shortly. And then of course it'll be the usual open forum. You can give us a call. A different mechanism though, you've got the this new New York number, which will be up there in your window title bar, so make sure that you look at it. And if you're listening to this program live, that's 1 to 3 GMT, 9 to 11 Eastern, 6 to 8 Pacific on a Wednesday in the US, then you are able to give us a ring on that number. Also, for the first time, to ask our guest questions. So if you have anything you want to ask Phil about in terms of what's going on in the UK, blindness-wise, then you're welcome to do that as well. So without any further ado, let me say good morning to where you are, Phil. Very early morning, in fact.
Good morning, Jonathan.
Thank you so much for getting Hi. Up at this dreadful hour.
Well, I've got a big cup of coffee here to keep me awake.
Oh, excellent. Well, I've got a meat pie waiting, so we're set. We're set for a cosy chat. Let me ask you about the National Talking Express then, because it's quite an old publication by cassette publication standards. What, about 21 years on now? How did it get started?
Okay, well, we started in September 1979, and for a year, in 1978, I produced a tape magazine for a club in London called the Jubilee Club. And at the time, they were a local club, and they decided that they wanted to have a national magazine. And I produced it, I think it was 10 editions I produced for that starting out, and it didn't really have too much of a clue how to do it. And I said to him, well, look, you know, why don't you let me have a go at it, and I'll give you a few tips. And he said, okay, you're on. So I did it for 10 issues, I believe. And the problem was, in the end, that they wanted to have people on the committee, which were local, but they wanted to produce a national magazine. And there were quite a few of us that said, well, look, this is ridiculous. You've either got to be a local magazine and be run locally, or a national magazine and be run nationally. And there was a disagreement, so a whole load of us just pulled out. And it was a long time ago now, so we don't bear any grudges, of course. You know, I mean, we've still got lots of friends in the Jubilee Club, so we've got nothing against them at all. But that was the reason why National Sports and Social Club for the Visually Handicapped, I'll refer to it as NSCAF, NSSTVH. That was formed in September 1979, and it was a sports club and a social club, and the National Talking Express originally was part of the NSCAF. Okay? You there?
Yeah, I sure am. Yeah, I'm listening with bated breath here.
Oh, right, so yeah, okay. So that was how the National Talking Express first started, and it ran from September 79 up until, I think it was January 1985. Now, at that point, the NSSCVH actually was disbanded due to the fact that they couldn't actually get enough people that wanted to sit on their committee and go to all the meetings and that sort of thing. And they decided that it was just really too much bother to carry on doing a sports club. So at the closure meeting, a few of us stood up and said, well, look, you know, we've got all the copying equipment now, why don't we carry on running a tape magazine and form a new organisation and specifically call it the National Talking Express? So that is how NTE itself became a charity in its own right. I think it was January 1985 when we actually started out, and we called it for a while the New National Talking Express. But of course, as we've been going ever since, it's not really new anymore, I guess.
Oh, yes, it's not. And you were telling me that you have every issue just about that you've ever done of the magazine still archived.
Yeah, we've got them on cassette, the original masters. I think there's about three that got lost out of all the ones that have ever been produced. But other than that, yes, we've got every edition.
It must be interesting to go back and listen to the way that the magazine has evolved over that period.
Oh, well, I haven't listened to some of the old editions for a long time now. About 5 years ago, we did a documentary, and we did actually start going through some of the old editions. And yes, indeed, it was quite fun to listen back at all those times, you know, in the past, right back to edition number one, in fact. And I've still got them, and perhaps someday, you know, if we've got the time, maybe we can let you have some of these old editions and you can put them on your archives if you want to.
That'd be interesting. How many readers do you have now with NTE?
Well, that's a very difficult question, but I can tell you how many actual registered families we have. We've got, at the moment, I think it's 560-odd registered families. They're people that actually get our tapes on a regular basis. And obviously in those households, I mean, there may be one, two, or three, or four, or five listeners. And then apart from that, we do actually send our tapes to libraries and think places like that, where people, they get a copy, and then they copy it themselves and then send it around all their members of the library. There's one, for instance, in Japan. I think it's called the English-speaking library that we send out to. Mike Benguendos, I believe his name is, or something like that, in Japan. So, it's a difficult question to answer, but I'd say we've got at least 560 members, probably a lot more.
How do people find out, all the way in a place like Japan, for example, about NTE's existence?
Well, there's a magazine called Progress, I believe, which is run by the Institute for the Blind. And somebody said to me one day, well, why don't you advertise, if you want to get international listeners, why didn't you advertise in Progress? So we did, and we had enormous response. We got letters from, you know, all over the US and Australia, New Zealand, and of course this one in Japan was one of the letters that we got. And we've got listeners all over the world. I mean, I know we're called National Talking Express, but in fact I suppose we really should change our name to the Global Talking Express, especially now that you're very kind enough to relay our programs onto ACB.
Well, there you go. I guess the majority of your listeners will be based in the UK, though, would they?
Yeah, I suppose, I would guess, we've got probably about 85% of our listeners are in the UK, that we know of anyway, and the rest are scattered around the world. But the next most populous country, other than the UK, would be the USA. We've got quite a lot of listeners in the USA.
Well, some of them may be listening to you now, and of course people love that English accent, you know.
Oh dear. We've got lots of listeners in the USA, and we're very, very pleased to have listeners in any part of the country, any part of the world, I mean, sorry. It is 2 o'clock in the morning, Jonathan, so please forgive me if I sound a bit confused, but I'm a little bit tired.
Oh, a heavy day today, actually.
you
were out fundraising, weren't you, if I recall correctly?
Yes, indeed. I've been to a place called Bethnal Green in East London at a tube station, and I've been standing around most of the day collecting money for the charity. We are a registered charity, and without these collections, at the moment anyway, we just simply wouldn't exist, because we don't have any government funding at the moment anyway.
What I always enjoy about visiting London is that wonderful message that you get on some of the underground, Mind the Gap. Wonderful stuff.
Mind the Gap, yeah. There's a lot of stations, at the Bank station particularly, I think was the first one, as far as I know, that put that announcement out.
We're speaking with Phil Trold, if you've just joined us. This is ACB Radio Blind Line on ACB Radio Mainstream, and if you want to give us a call, you're most welcome to do that. Just look at the window title of your Real Player or your Winamp. Just push insert T if you're using JFW, Control Shift T if you're using Window Eyes, and for other screen readers, well, I suppose I should learn. And give us a call on the New York number that's listed there and enter the PIN, and you're welcome to ask Phil any questions. Do people pay a subscription annually to NTE to receive it?
No, in fact, we are subscription-free, Jonathan. We do have a one-off enrolment fee of £5 sterling, but that basically just goes towards the cost of the high-speed tape copiers and, you know, towards the cassettes and the postal wallets and that sort of thing. I mean, we did try a subscription idea in the past, but we found it was so, you know, such a lot of time was wasted on administration and checking out whether somebody had paid or not, and it became such a habit, we'll just trap the subscription idea and just ask to give us a fiver when they join, and then what we have is a suggested £5 donation each year. We say each April, well, look, you know, if you're listening and you're enjoying the service, everything costs money, nothing's free in this world. You know, the tape copies need to be repaired now and again. So please, if you will, you know, give us a fiver a year if you can afford it, or if not, pay us whatever you can afford. Some people give us nothing, other people give us £20. You know, it really just depends on people's situation. So that's basically the answer to your question, I hope.
Yeah, and for people who haven't heard the magazine yet on ACB Radio, and it's available now in the on-demand archives of the website as well, but it seems that you...
Oh, great.
Yeah, we've got it all up there now. It seems as if you've got some sort of a format that you follow every month, and in particular you broadcast a lot of interesting information about the radio and communications and satellite industries, which I find quite fascinating.
Yeah, well, the format is, for those of you who haven't heard, we normally start off with what we call the contents review. I mean, it's like the contents page of a book, I suppose, where we give people a preview of what's to come. And that's quite useful for people who are listening on tape, because they can use their queue and review service there to actually, you know, skip around. If they want to go specifically to something, they can just jump to it straight away. So that's why we do that. And also, of course, in the future, when we're going back on archive programs, it's very handy to actually listen to the contents review and see exactly what's in that particular program, so that you can refer to things in the future if you need to. So that's the reason we do that. And then after the contents review, we go on to the information, you know, the actual contact information, email address, telephone address, and that sort of thing. And we talk about the fact that we're subscription free and that sort of thing. And then we go on to the competition, which we run each month. What we do is we've always had a competition every month since we first started, actually, in 1979. But a lot of our abroad listeners sort of said, well, look, we've only got 1 month to send back the answers, so could you consider running two competitions at the same time and stagger them, so that people have always got 2 months to actually enter the competition, and that therefore gives abroad listeners more time to get their entries in, bearing in mind that the snail mail can actually take you know, up to 6 weeks to get somewhere, I suppose. So that's why we have two competitions. We normally run, say, for example, the March competition, and then in April we'll repeat the March competition again and have a new April competition, and so on. So that's the competition, and we give away prizes. Some of them are donated to us by other listeners, and some by sort of radio stations and TV stations. We had a donation recently from VH1, the video pop station.
Okay.
So that was very nice. They sent us a box of CDs. They sent us, so it's very kind of them. So then we got, yeah, so that's the competition. It might be general knowledge, or it could be a music competition or a mystery sound competition. And we are open to suggestions, and we in fact invite listeners to send in competitions themselves. And then after that, we normally go on to what we call the mailbox, which is sort of basically acknowledging letters and tape messages that have come in. And then we also give our latest news, if there's anything important to tell the listeners, any new developments or anything that we're offering, you know, as a way of actually raising a bit of money, like, for instance, recycled cassettes and T-shirts and that sort of thing, you know. So after that, we sort of go on to the media news, which you referred to. Now, this has been going for quite some time. I mean, I've always been interested myself in the media. I've always been listening to shortwave radio since I was a child at school. And then radio started for me in about 1964, when all the offshore radio stations started here in the UK.
Oh, yes,
and that was a very, very exciting time. Very, very exciting time indeed, you know, with Radio Caroline and Radio London. And that really got me hooked on radio. From then on, I've never really looked back, I suppose. So, yeah, that was how I first got into radio, and then it sort of developed on from there, Jonathan. I mean, we had sort of the satellite thing started for me in about 1989, I think it was, and somebody said, well, did you know that you could listen to Radio Luxembourg in stereo on a satellite? You know, and we've been used to listening to Luxembourg and the signal fading up and down on the AM band, you know. And then suddenly to listen to Radio Luxembourg in stereo was really quite a buzz.
Yeah.
And that's what sort of got me into satellites, really. And I heard about satellites from another tape magazine, which was being run by a guy called Brian Hartchin. He had a magazine called OKR Radio, and he started to talk about satellites and gadgets and that sort of thing. And once you sort of did a review of the satellite system, you know, Sky in the very early days, I went out and got myself a receiver, and I haven't looked back since. It's gone from one thing to the next. Now we're all into the digital world of Sky Digital and all the latest technology. So that's how we sort of got going with the media news. And people have sort of, we started it off really as an experiment, and people said, well, look, you're the only magazine we know of that actually does media news for blind people. Whatever you do, don't stop doing it, just keep on. And it seems to have grown bigger and bigger as it's been going along. And in fact, in the future, when the funds permit, we are actually considering running specifically a media magazine in addition to our normal National Talk and Express and the NTE supplement.
Because, of course, people get two magazines as it is, don't they? They get the National Talking Express and the supplement, as you've just mentioned. So how did that happen?
There's a guy, unfortunately, who's no longer with us, a guy called Melvin Tinsley, who he was chairman for many years, and he suggested that we have a supplement. I think this came out in about 1994, something like that. And he said, well, look, why don't we run a supplement magazine? And he ran the magazine himself, the supplement, for quite some time. But then, unfortunately, it was discovered that he'd got terminal cancer. And he became quite ill, and eventually, you know, he passed on, which was very regrettable. But he was actually gave it the idea to have a supplement magazine. And then after he died, one of his good friends took over the supplement for a while, and until he wasn't able to do it anymore. That was Stuart Lawler. And then I believe we had Stuart Turner. Funny, two Stuarts, funny enough. Stuart Turner did the supplement for, I think, about 10 editions or something like that. And he got rather busy and involved in other things, so he moved on. And then the supplement stopped for a while, and we had another guy who tried doing it for a couple of editions, but it didn't really seem too successful. So in the end, we ended up with our current co-producer, if you like. His name is Brian Smallwood, and well, I don't know about you, Jonathan, but I think he's doing a very good job.
Absolutely, I think it's really, really excellent stuff. I enjoy both issues. Tell me about the gear that you personally use when you put this together, because I know we've got a few techie types who are listening, and they'll be interested in what it takes to put together such a professional production.
The equipment you mean? So I didn't quite understand the question.
Yeah, the gear, all the equipment you've got in there that makes it all go.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah, well, I've got a three-headed cassette deck. It's an Iowa, and it's got the DBX Pro and all that stuff on it. You know, it's quite a good machine. It's a three-headed machine, and the advantage with the three heads is that you can actually test the recordings to make sure that the bias is set properly, and you get the absolute maximum quality output that you can on a compact cassette.
Absolutely. I believe that Shakespeare had a three-head tape deck, actually. Wasn't it Shakespeare that said three heads are better than two or something?
Yeah. Very good, very good, very good. I like your sense of humour. How can I follow that? So at the moment we're producing the actual master on this three-headed machine. But we are using also, we've got a DAT machine here, which at the moment has got a technical problem. I've got to get that fixed, so it's not being used at the moment. But I've also now got two mini-disc recorders. I've got a large, like a studio type version one, which is about as big as a video recorder, I guess you could say. And that's gone into be serviced at the moment, but there was a problem with that as well. But I've just actually gone out and bought myself the very latest mini disc record. I think it's the MZ90 or something like that. I think you're familiar with it, aren't you, Jonathan?
Yeah, I've got the 70, which is a very similar thing, except that I bought the 70 because it hasn't got the jolly old jogging wheel, which I find a bit of a nuisance, so that's why I went for the 70 instead. Yeah. But they're good machines.
Yeah, yeah, well, I'm just about getting used to the jog wheel and stuff. It is a problem, though, because, your listeners may not know this, but I'm actually registered blind myself. I do have some sight, though. I'm lucky that I'm, you know, when I'm using the big mini disc recorder, it's got an LED display on it, and if I put my eye sort of more or less right up to the display, I can actually see where it says, you know, divide and combine and all that sort of thing, or the menu system. I can get around fairly well. It's a bit of a strain because I've got to put my eye right close to it, but I can actually manage to do all the editing and stuff, but I find it a little bit tedious. I'd really like to get into learning how to use, digital editing on a computer. I think that's the next step for me that I'd like to have a go at, really. Brian Smallwood himself actually uses SoundForge, which I believe you're familiar with, aren't you?
Yes, indeed. It's a great package. Use it every day.
Yeah, oh, right. Well, he uses SoundForge, and he obviously produces the supplement magazine on SoundForge, so in the future it may be possible, perhaps, for him to send you the audio file, via the internet or whatever, so that you get it sort of an MP3, you know, so that would then dramatically speed up the process of getting the programs from us to you. So that's something hopefully we can do in the not-too-distant future. So I'm looking along that line as well, getting a copy of SoundForge and trying to learn how to use it. So, anyway, he was asking me about the studio. We've got, as I say, a couple of mini disc players. We've got this rather nice cassette deck. We've got a Sony Pro Walkman, which we use for doing interviews and stuff. And I've just started to use this new mini disc recorder for sort of roving reports. In fact, I've done one this week. We went to the Charity Fair 2000, and it was most entertaining, and unfortunately I was only there for a couple of hours, and I only wish I had more time, you know, to actually be there and meet more people. But the people we did meet were extremely friendly, and we got a lot of information, and you will be hearing some of the recordings I made on my mini disc recorder, the first time I've ever used it publicly. You'll be hearing those coming up on future editions of National Talking Express.
Well, that'd be good, and I'm pleased that you've lived to tell the tale as well.
Getting back to the studio, though, I mean, I've got a mixer. It's not a particularly wonderful mixer. It's only a 5-channel. But I would really like to get a new mixer, because it's getting a bit old in the tooth now. But then I've got a couple of old turntables here that I use for when we do the music competitions. People tend to like the golden oldie sort of competitions where you guess what the record is and that sort of thing. So we've got a couple of turntables still going, and we've got a CD player and a microphone, obviously, and headphone monitoring, and we've got a couple of JBL speakers that we use for when we're playing back, you know, to the guests who come into the studio. And that's about it as far as the studio is concerned. And then on the actual copying side of things, we use the Telex CD copying. You're familiar with that particular one?
Yeah, that's very heavy.
Yeah, it's pretty good, actually. Yeah. I do the Telex copiers, I must admit. I mean, we started off with the Woolensack ones. I don't know if you've ever seen those. That was the first copying system we ever had. And we had that right from 79 up until, oh goodness me, I think about 1989 or 1990, something like that. And then we got this new Telex system, which we've had ever since. And we've just spent, are you sitting down, are you? £2,600 on having our Telex system completely reconditioned. And we've had new recording heads replaced where necessary, and all the technical specifications brought up as near to the new standards we can possibly get them. And with that, I think that's money well spent, because we hadn't actually had the machine serviced for many years, and the recording quality was beginning to go down, so we thought, well, it's really time now to get these machines serviced properly. So we lashed out, and we're still trying desperately to get all that money back again. So if any of your listeners out there, Jonathan, feel like sending us a donation, they're always gratefully received.
Well, there you go. What was I going to ask you? Oh, yes, you were the first magazine to go stereo in Britain, I understand.
Indeed, yes, we were. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of things going on. I mean, I used to do a lot of... Before I was into sort of tape magazines, I used to do hospital radio broadcasting. And obviously I'd started to record programs, being a sort of like the DJ, you know. And obviously they were in stereo and cassettes were in stereo. And I thought, well, if we're doing all these tape magazines that are out at the moment, you know, why don't we have one in stereo? And when you're actually interviewing somebody, say, for example, a sports event, like a swimming competition, it really adds effect to the actual programme, to actually hear all the people splashing around and moving around in the stereo. Another thing I did was I did some recordings at a tandem marathon, and that was quite fun. So, yeah, I mean, we were the first one to go stereo. When we started in stereo right from the very first edition in back in 79.
Why is it that there are so many of these talking newspapers or magazines in Britain? Because it really seems to be quite a growth industry over there.
There are literally hundreds and hundreds of tape magazines. I think probably there's more in the UK than the US, for example, because in the US and Canada and what have you, there's radio stations specifically designed for visually impaired people to listen to and get information from. Well, in this country so far we don't have that facility, and that's why our project at the moment is to try and raise enough actually videos, which we intend to call Radio for the Pre-K. The idea of starting that was that I actually went to see some friends in New York back in 1990, and I happened to tune into the station. I believe it's called In Touch. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
That's right.
And I thought, wow, you know, it's a radio station for blind people. This is really, really cool. You know, wouldn't it be nice if we could do it in the UK? But I never really quite knew how I could go about getting a radio station, and it was something that I had in the back of my mind for many years. But I'd never really sort of worked out how we could get the funding or how we could do it. And then in 1996, wife and I and our youngest son, who was two at the time, I believe, we went to Canada, and we were going to go and see some relations. And unfortunately, the day before we was due to go there, they rang up and said, well, look, you can't stay with us now because we've got to go to Pakistan because there's a funeral. And we thought, oh no, what are we going to do now? Because we'd actually got a round flight plan booked. I mean, the idea was we went from here, from London to New York, we stayed with some friends there for a while, and then we were to go on to Toronto to stay with our relations, and from there we'd booked another flight to go over to Kalamazoo to see one of our listeners who we've become very good friends with. I wonder if she's listening, actually, Christy Vantile. If so, hi, Christy. so we went, you know, we was due to go on this round trip, and then from Kalamazoo back to New York, and then New York back to London again. And when these people in Canada said, well, you know, you can't stay with us, we thought, well, if we don't go, we're going to lose an awful lot of money in airfares. So my good friend Dave Berber, who you may know is quite heavily involved with instruction manuals for things like JAWS for Windows, and I believe Dave is listening actually right now, so hi Dave. Anyway, Dave said, well, look, you know, if you don't go, you're going to waste a lot of money, so he said you might be better off just finding a hotel in Toronto and just going anyway and just finding out what the heck's there. So I must admit, I was quite scared to go, you know, at first, and I thought, oh, I don't know, I've never been there, I don't know anybody, you know, how's it going to turn out? And he said, oh, go on, go for it, you know, and he encouraged me and my wife Sam, and he said, look, come on, I'll try and book you in a hotel. And he started ringing around all these hotels for me from New York, and we found out more or less the cheapest one we could get, simply because we hadn't actually budgeted in our holiday plan to stay in a hotel, you know, for 10 days in Toronto. But Dave did actually find a hotel for us. And we just decided to go ahead and we got to Toronto. And I must admit, when I got there, I found it an amazing place. We thoroughly enjoyed our stay in Toronto, and all the people there seemed so friendly. And the first thing that we did, you know, the next day after we'd unpacked and everything, is we went to the Canadian Institute for the Blind, and I took my Sony Pro Walkman, and we did some interviews with them for NTE. And we asked them, well, you know, what's here? We've never been here. We don't know anything at all about Canada. And they said, well, there's voice print. And I said, well, what's that? And they said, well, it's the radio station for the blind. And I thought, wow, my luck's in. You know, this is another chance to actually get involved and go and see the radio station. So we got the phone number, and they gave us a contact name of one of the people involved with the station. And we rang up the next morning, and we spoke to this guy called Randy. He's an extremely nice guy. And he said, well, look, you know, why don't you come down? You know, I'll show you around. And we didn't realise it at the time, but he said he was going to come and pick us up in the car. And what we didn't realise is that he'd actually travelled about, I think it was about 15 or 20 miles across Toronto to come to our hotel, pick us up in the car and take us back to the radio station. So we was totally amazed when we knew that he'd gone to that extreme to pick us up and take us there. And when we got there, I mean, they made us so welcome, it was absolutely unbelievable. So obviously we took the Sony Pro Walkman player again, and I thought, great, this is really my chance now to try and do a kind of a feasibility study, if you like, as to how this radio station that I'd had in the back of my mind could actually be run from the UK. So we interviewed loads of people in the station, you know, the managing director and the program controller, and we looked around the studios, and we were so completely amazed by the whole idea of it. I've got nothing but admiration for that station, because they really have got it organised well. I mean, have you ever been there yourself?
Not to that particular one. I have been to a few RPH stations in Australia, and they have tremendous facilities there.
Well, I strongly suggest if you're ever in Toronto, give them a call and go and see them, because they'll make you so welcome, you know, especially if they know you're involved with radio. And they really do a really good service. I mean, they provide, this was when, at the time, you know, back in 1996, they probably advanced on from where they were then. But at the time, they provided an 8-hour program block per day, which is sort of repeated round the clock three times. And at the time, they were recording their programs onto a higher quality VHS, you know, video cassette recorder, which I think was converted to digital so that they got digital sound on it. And they used two sort of four-hour tapes sort of shuttling between one to the other so that there's no actual gap. You know, when you've heard the first 4 hours of the first four programs, the minute that's finished, then the next one kicks in. And then by the time that the second 4 hours is finished, obviously the first one has wound back and re-queued itself, and then the first one takes over from, you know, from the second one again, and it just goes on and on like that, continuously. And they've got this 8 hours of programs, and we thought, wow, what a fantastic idea. And so we decided to try and set up radio for the print impaired UK on the same lines as the way that they were doing it at the time. Probably by now, I would think that they've gone over to computer hard disks and stuff. Probably that's what they're doing by now, I guess.
So in the UK project, are you looking at setting up a radio reading service that will be reading from the newspapers? We can finally find out what's in the tabloids and stuff like that. You know, read the Sunday Sport, you know what I mean?
Well, yes and no. I mean, we feel that there's a need for more than just a reading service. Some of our programming will be similar to like what you can get, say, in the USA with these radio reading services. But at the same time, we feel that there is a need for things more like what you're doing, Jonathan, on ACB, to be honest with you. I mean, some of the ideas that you were coming up with on Sunday when we had our meeting, reviewing new high-tech devices like talking microwave, the thing that we've been doing a long time now, and people just can't seem to get enough of it. I mean, there's more information. We get more information here in London than we've got time to actually process and put on the air. So it seems a natural progression to get a radio station and try and include more of the information that, you know, at the moment we're not able to make use of.
So what sort of support are you getting for the initiative so far? Are you getting money flooding in?
Well, no, unfortunately. We're not, to be honest. We've sent out hundreds of emails. I suppose I better not mention the names, people. To give you a clue, I mean, people who own radio and TV stations and TV networks in this country, you know, I'll say no more than that. People who've got a lot of money, and really, £350,000 is probably not very much to them. I mean, it's peanuts, you know. And we've written to these people, and they say, well, yeah, wonderful idea, good luck, but unfortunately we're already involved with other things. And we've had a lot of these knockback kind of emails. As you get to know me over the years, you're one of these sort of people that never give up. You know, I mean, if it takes me 20 years, I'm sure at the end I'm going to get this radio station on the air, hook or by a crook, one way or another. So, yeah, the answer to your question is we are finding it difficult, to be honest, to get the funding.
Why is that? I mean, it seems that if you can set a precedent or demonstrate a precedent that most Western countries have some sort of radio reading service for people with print disabilities, and Britain stands out as a country that has no such thing, you know, you would think that there might be some sort of central government funding that might be forthcoming for a project like that.
Well, I only wish there was, Jonathan. I mean, the nearest we've got to what you've got in the US, anyway, is we've got the Talking Newspaper Association of the United Kingdom, which is a very good organisation, I must say. I mean, they've got hundreds and hundreds of titles that you can get on compact cassette, and also they've got some on CD-ROM as well now that you can get. You can subscribe, I think it's about £17 a year, and they send you a CD each week, a CD-ROM, which you can put in your computer, and you can read virtually every magazine that they produce, you know, in text form on your computer. So I think that's a wonderful idea. It's really good because people have got a massive choice. I mean, it's just humongous, the amount of titles that they've got. But I don't actually myself subscribe to the CD service because I wouldn't really have time actually to listen to all the different text things, you know. But I do subscribe to Nork, and I get things like the Satellite Times, for example, and that gives like the details of all the Sky film channels and, you know, things like Discovery and that sort of thing. I'm a big Discovery fan. I love listening to high-tech programs like Beyond 2000, and there's quite a lot on the satellite here in the UK.
Yeah, well, they've changed their format, though. At least they have in New Zealand. We've got a Discovery Channel now that seems to emanate from Australia, and one of the sad things is that we seem to have lost the guy who used to go the Discovery Channel. It was worth listening to just for that, but we seem to have lost him.
Yeah, well, I don't know if I've actually been to New Zealand. I'd love to come there one day.
Oh, yes. Well, you must do that. Perhaps when the English...
Well, I'm not a cricket fan, so I wouldn't like to comment about our cricket players. But I know we certainly do have lots of cricket fans. One, for example, is Paul Davies, who's actually one of our trustees of the charity. And he's been with us virtually since the beginning. I think he missed the first... maybe a year or so, but he's been with us for a very, very long time, and he's a cricket fanatic, and he's also a media mogul. He's really into radio in a big way. I mean, he's like a hawk of the airwaves. He scans up and down shortwave, and if there's a new station that suddenly appears, he'll know about it.
Yeah, that's one of the things that we've lost with those new digital tuners, is that people don't sort of turn up and down the dial and discover new things as much as they did. But can you tell me, do you have any estimates at this stage as to when you hope a radio for the print impaired will be on in the UK?
Oh, that is a very, very difficult question. I'd like to think it's tomorrow, but being realistic, you know, everything is money, isn't it? I mean, maybe as I'm saying this today, there might be somebody out there who's listening who agrees with what I'm saying and realises just how backward we are in the UK not to have a radio station for the blind. And if there is anybody out there who agrees with what I'm saying and wants to give us a helping hand, we do need the money. You know, that is the real thing we'd like to push across. But I'm going to let you into a little bit of a secret, although I can't actually mention the name of the organisation yet, because the deal hasn't actually been finalised. It's only suggestions at the moment. But if this particular deal does come off from a very well-known international broadcaster, I'll say no more than that at this stage, but if that comes off, it could mean that the radio station could be on the air literally within months. Because what they're suggesting is that rather than have to raise the whole £350,000 budget, which is what it would cost if we actually set up our own permanent studio that could be accessed sort of 24 hours a day. I mean, at the moment, the studio's in my house, and although I do recording mostly at night when the kids are asleep, to be realistic, to have a studio in my house, you know, with a radio station 24 hours a day would be ridiculous. I mean, we would have to have a proper studio, the premises outside. So bearing that in mind, we'd have to rent somewhere. We've got most of the equipment, I think, that we could use. But bearing that in mind, then of course, it being a 24-hour service, we want to run it in the same sort of way that VoicePrint does in Toronto, having an 8-hour program block that will go around the clock three times, and we intend to have it on satellite. We was originally going to put it on analog satellite, but in the UK at least, it seems that people are really going over to digital in a big way now, more and more. Thousands of people each month are going over to digital rather than analog. So it seems, I mean, we were told that Sky Television have said that their radio stations on the analog system probably will be closing by this December. So, you know, it's probably going to be a non-starter to go for an analog subcarrier. We have been offered one, incidentally, from a TV station. Again, I won't mention the name of the station, but they've told us, they've given us a quote for about £46,000 a year to rent a channel, which is considerably cheaper than what we were originally quoted a few years ago. I mean, the basic price then was about £100,000 per subcarrier per year. So that's what we were originally expecting to pay in our budget. So by the time you've added, say, £100,000 for the subcarrier plus, you know, your premises, then your electric and gas bills and telephone, then you've got to have, obviously, a team of people to employ to run it. I mean, at the moment, National Talking Express is run, apart from myself, I'm the only part-time paid worker, but everybody else is voluntary at this point in time. But if the radio station gets on the air, obviously, we've worked it out that we'd need at least 7 full-time workers and 4 part-timers, and they would only sort of come in during the weekends to run the station so that we can all have a bit of a break and have a bit of time with our families. And also, of course, the 4 part-timers would be available, you know, if anybody's ill or on holiday and that sort of thing, you know?
Yes.
But the basic full-time, 7 full-time, would be the main people that would run it sort of all through the week. And then, of course, we'd have hundreds of volunteers to come in and read from the newspapers and produce programmes and that sort of thing.
I realise that you're talking about other things than the newspapers, such as technology issues for blind people, etc. But just looking specifically at the newspaper idea, the radio reading service concept, I wonder whether technology has passed the UK by in terms of a radio reading service, because there are a number of telephone-based systems, for instance, which give you full access to the newspaper, read either by volunteers or synthetic speech. And of course, the beauty of that is that you're not stuck listening to an article on the radio that you're not interested in. You can skip ahead, you can speed up the reading, do all of those sorts of things on a telephone-based system. Might that not be a better way to go at this point, given that you have to build the infrastructure from scratch?
I've actually heard about one of these systems you're talking about. I believe there's a very good one in Australia that you can ring into and get, it's free, they've got a free phone number, And I agree with you. It's a great idea to actually have a touch tone menu where you go in and you choose which magazine you want to hear and you get it all free. I mean, that's a wonderful idea. I'm not knocking that in any way. But no, we feel that there is a need for a radio station. And as I said, if we can get this deal with this international broadcaster, it will mean that instead of having to raise the whole £350,000, we could end up having to only pay maybe, I don't know, 20, 30, 40,000. Or with a bit of luck, we could even get it free. I mean, this particular organisation are not a commercial organisation. They are a public service. And they've indicated that they are interested and considering actually running it for us on our behalf. All we would then have to do is just provide the programming. It would be very, very easy. I mean, if we've got a studio where we could just go and you know, record programs and whatever, and then we could probably, I could probably do a two-hour live program from my house, because, I mean, I could get an ISDN line, couldn't I? And have that mixer, and then just do a two-hour live show each day. And then, you know, if we could get, say, a two-hour live show, perhaps, you know, from ACB, if that's possible in the future, and that would be another 2 hours, wouldn't it? And then we've got things like Travel Radio, which we get from the USA, a very good program, which is produced by Patricia Lawrence. And she actually sends us a half-an-hour program of Travel Radio each week. So we've actually got more programs here than we've ever had time to use. But she's indicated to me that, you know, when we get the radio service together, she'd be quite happy for us to use as many of the Travel Radio shows as we feel that we can fit into our time schedule. So that would be one of the programs that we would have on probably once a day, you know, a different Travel Radio show.
Yeah, I've always thought it must be a good job doing this program, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I don't know about... Well, what do you think of the Travel Radio? Do you enjoy... Have you heard any of the Travel Radio programs?
Yeah, not only do we get it through NTE, but we also actually carry Travel Radio in our own right as well.
Oh, right. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've got nothing but praise for what she does. I mean, it's exciting. I mean, I have said this to her personally. Yeah, it would be nice if she could do it in stereo, because that would then actually enhance the live element of it. You know, the fact that she's going up a mountain, or, you know, going on all these excursions and in boats and things. I mean, to actually have all the sound, like, you know, the waves of the sea moving around and things like that, I think would be quite... We really would add some atmosphere to it. So maybe she will in the future consider going over to stereo. But... We'll be featuring the Travel Radio programs. And the other sort of things that we're thinking about doing, apart from just reading magazines and newspapers, which we will be doing, of course, but the other idea is that we're going to have a live phone-in show, rather similar to what you're doing here on Blind Line.
Right.
We want to try and do that sort of thing as well, whereby each day we'll have, say, a two-hour live show, and we'll have someone, you know, a guest person to take part. One day it might be talking about a computer program like Jaws for Windows or you know, whatever, Window Eyes, etc. We'll have an expert either live in the studio or on the telephone, like we're talking now. And, you know, another day it would be a totally different subject, like, say, for instance, outdoor pursuits. It might be, you know, talking about, I don't know, climbing or swimming or just about anything, really. Golf for blind people, or gardening tips for blind gardeners, you know. I mean, there's a whole load of things out there that you could do.
Oh, there sure is.
The idea is that we have this... Well, the idea is that we're going to have this live phone-in show for 2 hours each day, probably 5 days a week, I would think, because the weekends... The idea we've got for the weekends is more kind of a relaxed sort of format. A lot of people have suggested, well, if you're going to get it on the air in the weekends, why don't you have, say, a request show where you just play a few records and record requests and dedications for other blind people, you know, who want to send messages and that sort of thing across the world. So I mean, that could be something that we will do as well in the weekends. You know,
we'll certainly follow the progress of this with considerable interest, and no doubt you'll keep listeners of NTE, which of course we are broadcasting, informed as to how it's going. And I really appreciate you getting up at this hour of the morning to spend this 50 minutes or so with us. I'm sure that, you know, the majority of our listeners still come from the US. I'm sure they found it quite informative to find out what exactly happens in the UK and some of the things that that you're up to.
Could I just ask you a question then?
Yeah, by all means.
A minute, if you don't mind. I'd like specifically to find out just exactly who is listening to this, really, if there's a way of doing that. We're interested in actually getting new listeners, whether it be, you know, on your station or on any other station for that matter, and also we're also keen to have NTE and the NTE supplement put out on other radio stations as well. So if there's anyone listening out there at the moment who runs a radio reading service and feels that National Talking Express could be aired, again, you know, we'd like to hear from you. So could we perhaps give our contact information? So
probably the best thing to do for an internet audience would be to give an email address if you have one for someone.
Yeah. Okay, right. Well, our assistant secretary, Dillis Rogers, deals with all the emails at the moment, and her address is, and now let's make sure I get this right, it's Dillis, that's D-I-L-Y-S, at pansypot, as in P-A-N-S-Y-P-O-T, dot demon, I'm sure you all know how to spell that, dot co dot uk. So that's the current NTE email address that Dillis is using. So any of your listeners, excuse me, any of your listeners can actually email us on that. We've also got our chairman, Colin Howard, who I believe is listening as well at this unearthly hour. And I think he's actually going to try and record this program on cassette, Jonathan. So you may just hear a little snippet of it on the magazine, depending on how it comes out, of course. So if you'd like to contact Colin Howard, our chairman, he's got a voicemail, you know, answer phone type thing. But if you leave your telephone number and the access code, if you're in a country, you know, other than the UK, your name and your telephone number, then Colin will get back to you at some stage. I can't imagine him bringing back at this time in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, but certainly if you leave your telephone number on there, the number from the UK is 01489 574 727, and the code for the UK from abroad is 44, I believe.
That's right.
So you have to do, what is it, 00, isn't it, for the international dialing code?
For most of the world, it's 011.
Oh, is it?
Mm.
Oh, right. Oh, okay. Well, I've learned something now. So once you've done the 44 for the UK, then you drop the first zero, so it would then be 1489 574 727. And I'm sure that Colin will be delighted to hear from any listeners of ACB. Then we've also got an address where people can write to if they want to use the snail mail system. That's our secretary. Her name is Jean Jackson, and she lives, oh hang on, can I get this right, it is early in the morning, oh dear, what's the address? Avondale Street, but I can't remember the number.
Well,
so
that's not a problem, because I think if most people who are listening to this, that they'll have email, so they'll tend to use that, I would think.
Yeah, okay, well in any case, Jonathan, I mean, the fact that you're playing NTE, at the beginning of every program that we produce, we always give out the address, so you know, they can get it from there, can't they, if they need to.
Absolutely. Well, thank
and
you
I'm
so much for being on the program. I've really appreciated your thoughts, and all the very best of luck with your radio for the print impaired.
Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks for inviting me on it. And can I say before I go, congratulations on what you're doing. I think it's a great idea, and I wish you every success. Keep it up, all power to your elbow.
Thank you very much, Phil. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, then.
Bye. And that's Phil Troll from National Talking Express, also trying to do some work on radio for the print impaired. And I think I've managed to drop that call. That's what we want to do. Yeah, we have. Okay. You're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream. I'd like to apologise for the audio there. We got Phil about 30 seconds before we were due to go to air, and really didn't have a chance to sort of assess the audio, and that's one of the things when we do these programs live. It's just sort of we get what we're given, and we had, of course, him calling into New York, and then us getting it from internet telephony, so I do hear the distortion, and we try to minimize it, but sometimes those things do happen in this wonderful electronic age still, particularly when the internet is involved. Well, now we are into our open part of the program, where we hope to hear from you about any topic. There are a number of things that you might want to raise. Feel free to just ring up and say hi. Tell us what you think of the new format. We'll be happy to answer any questions about ACB radio that you might have. Anything at all, really. You're welcome to phone in. I'll give you that number just in case for some reason you're not able to access it. It is 212-812-2800. So that's a US number, 212-812-2800, and then enter the PIN 1083-4173. That's the PIN 1083-4173. And we've got a couple of lines available now if you'd like to give us a call and get in first, because what often happens with these programs is that we start off quiet, and then of course when it's time to finish, everybody wants to ring in and have a bit of a scramble. So by all means, get in touch. A number of things that you may want to comment on. Of course, the big blindness related news story of the week has been the decision by Henter Joyce and Blazy Engineering to accept being bought by Freedom Scientific Company, which effectively puts Henter Joyce and Blazy Engineering under the same umbrella. We spoke with Paul Edwards in our Focal Point program last night a bit about this, and we had a couple of calls. You may want to comment about what you think it means. We will have our main menu show coming up Mondays 1 to 3 in the morning GMT. That's 9 to 11 Eastern on a Sunday night, Sunday 6 to 8 Pacific. And we will be speaking to Ted Henter on that program. Unfortunately, Dean Blazy wasn't available, but we'll be speaking with Ted Henter about exactly what it means, why he thinks it's a good move to have made. Ted was telling me that he and Dean Blazy have gone canoeing down the Panama Canal now, so we have already recorded the interview. So that's quite interesting, isn't it? But you may have some views as to what it means, whether this will in fact start a bit of a trend. Are we going to see some other mergers? And if we are, where do you think the synergies are? Where might we see other people getting involved there? Let's go to the telephones now. Area code 924, hello.
Happy 920.
Hang on, let me just wind you up here just a second. We'll wind you up. Let me just find the right... Yeah, how's it going? That sounds like Mike, is it?
That's Michael Cattell. How you doing, Jonathan?
How are you?
I'm pretty good. There's a little bit of delay here.
Oh, that's right. That's because I'm using internet telephony, you see.
Oh, how does that Spiderphone thing work anyway? Like, what do you do? Like, how do you control it?
Spiderphone is an audio conferencing system, and actually we should say thank you to Spiderphone for donating this facility to ACB Radio, and basically it allows me to control the calls from the web, so I have Internet Explorer open and I can see who's coming in. I can place calls on hold and put them on the air and do all the things that we would want to do in a normal talkback situation.
Pretty cool. I really enjoyed the interview, but what I noticed on Blind Line, I don't know if you did too, but your guest really sounded... Okay, now it must be the call coming in here.
That's fine, just keep going.
Okay, I noticed that the guest sounded distorted.
I've already mentioned that. I covered that and said that I just spoke about that after the interview.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry, I just kind of joined. But I like the interview, but what I want to talk about, though, is the Blazy Engineering merger with Henter Joyce.
Yep.
I don't think that's a good idea.
What are your concerns with it?
Well, JAWS, for one thing, I really never thought it was the best screen reader program, and Blazy Engineering's product is kind of outdated, and if they do an update with it, I think that it's really going to be somewhat disastrous. I mean, Blazy and HJ, they've kind of dwindle down to the wayside a little bit, and I think that they can give it a try, but I just don't think it was the best. Now, if GW Micro and Blazy teamed up, maybe we'd see something better.
Well, yeah, I think that I think people will find it interesting to find out just how independent the HJ and Hinderjoy's Arms of Freedom Scientific are going to be, and Ted Hinder will have some comments to make on that on Sunday evening. And of course, we had a number of people submitting questions to us about this, including what will happen with support of other Braille displays, for instance, that if Freedom Scientific has a screen reader and a Braille display, will they be careful to support third-party Braille displays? And we'll be discussing all of those issues on Sunday evening US time with Main Menu, so I'm sure you'll find that interesting.
Okay, and then a final question here is, will you be able to, I know you're using Spiderphone now, but will you be able to ever use the NetMeeting again, or is this going to be like the proprietary standard?
No, we won't be using NetMeeting because everybody has a telephone, and it's a much easier system. We were finding that we were getting a lot of questions from people who couldn't get their sound card working or whatever it was, and that we were in fact alienating less technically savvy people from participating. And so we're really hopeful that not only will we hear from our regulars on Blindline today, but also some new people who can now call us on the telephone at an affordable rate.
Well, thanks, Jonathan, for having me on. Nice show, and I love it.
Thank you very much, Mike. There he goes. You're with ACB Radio Blindline. Let's take this call here. Hi, this is Jonathan. How are you?
Good evening, Jonathan. It's Marvin Rush in Louisiana.
How are you, Marvin? You got your internet telephony sorted out today.
Does it sound somewhat better than last night?
Considerably.
I thought so. This thing with Blazy and Hinderjoy merging, I think everybody is up in the air about it. And in fact, I am especially, because as it turns out, I think I'll probably be ordering a Braille speaker or some manner of a note taker within the next few months. So I think personally, I'm going to kind of just hold my cards and see what happens.
So you think that this merger will mean something pretty exciting in terms of Blazy or Freedom Scientific's response to the Braille note, for instance?
I'm not sure what it means, personally. I mean, I think that's why I'm going to just kind of hold off and wait and see exactly what's going to happen.
It'll be an interesting thing to watch, and also just to see how closely they hold on to their branding, you know, because Hinderjoy and Blazy Engineering are both very recognizable brands, and the release that came out yesterday that has been forwarded and re-forwarded and re-re-forwarded to many lists does address that question, that actually, you know, they are looking at retaining their brands. So I'm not sure whether we will notice much difference. It'll be interesting to see that.
Yes, it will. And one more thing, last night when you were interviewing the ACB president, that you kind of touched on a little bit, but as a teacher of the visually impaired, I see a lot every day. Of course, I see the young people who are kind of up nowadays. And, you know, I think one thing that we really, as a blind community, need to prepare ourselves for, and that is the person who is multi-capped and blind, because nowadays I would probably tell you...
Oh, Marvin, hang on a second. This is me gaining some experience with the device here. Just a second. Sorry, Marvin, I was putting the wrong call on hold. I will get used to this. It's like... There we go. I got you back now, Marvin.
No,
I apologize.
I think I'm back.
Yes, I apologize. I pushed
That's
the wrong
okay.
button there. I'm getting used to it.
But anyway, I mean, probably, and I've been in my job here 14 years, and I would tell you that 75% of the students that I have taught throughout the years really need to be prepared to deal with those people.
It's a real tough one, isn't it? And used called superblind, and I suppose that the so-called superblind, whatever that means, have to be careful that they don't deprive those with other disabilities or for whatever reason are less able from some sort of dignity and sense of purpose in their life. And Paul did acknowledge that that's an issue.
Yes, in fact, last night he was talking about the sheltered workshops, as I've called them throughout the years. I know that, you know, a lot of people, they don't like those places, but for some persons, those are the only places that they could work and have a little spending money and dignity in their lives.
Yeah, that's a very good point, and somehow we've got to deal with that. I appreciate you giving us a call, Marvin. I better go and deal with another person who's called through here.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye for now. You're listening to Blind Line, and if you'd like to give us a call, the number should be in your title bar of your Winamp and Real Player. Area code 716, good evening to you.
Good afternoon, or evening. Jonathan, this is Ann Parsons calling from Rochester, New York.
It's very nice to hear you, Ann. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And you?
I'm just great. I'm just hanging in there trying to work all this gear. You know, it's always a nerve-wracking experience when you're sitting in front of a virtual studio desk for the first time.
Well, it must be really hard to do that, because I had an experience with something like this back last October, and it was really quite something. And I wanted to compliment you on your three new streams. I think they're great. And sometime when, you know, you don't have a lot of callers calling in, or the Blazy issue isn't so on everybody's mind, I'd like to give you my view. I know you've been talking a lot with Matt Campbell and also with TV Ramen about the Linux. And you've been hearing from techies, and I think you need to hear from just an ordinary user like me who is using Linux on a daily basis, and why, and what makes it so great.
Well, I'll tell you what, we haven't got any calls stacked up right now, so, you know, I'm interested in what you think, because I remember Matt telling me that you were now a Linux convert, and I'm very intrigued by this. So by all means, I'm interested in hearing about that.
Okay, well, I'll I'll give you a brief synopsis. I tried Windows, and I used Windows for about a year and a half, and I think it has to do with the fact of how people learn. I really think that's a major factor. As an educator, I'm looking at this from the educator's point of view, and I see that there are two ways to learn, or the main two ways are visual and auditory. Now, I know that you're going to say, well, do blind people learn visually? Well, yeah, they do, in the sense that some blind people have a better grasp of visual concepts than other blind people. And I think that Linux, in its text mode, command line mode, is very good for those of us who have a hard time comprehending the graphics of Windows and comprehending how something's laid out on the screen. And one of the things I really love about Emacs Speak, I'm using Emacs Speak instead of SpeakUp at the moment, and one of the things I love about it, absolutely love, is the sound icons. There are sound icons for everything that you do. You know, in lieu of Windows, and it's faster. It's much faster than Windows. I found myself spending extra time trying to find things in Windows, and it's so much faster with this command line mode. I'm really thankful that I made the switch. Now, of course, I still have Windows because I have the Ruby, you know, reading software, and I won't give that up. But, you know, I look at the differences between the two, and I'm very well satisfied. But the thing here is that there's choice. And that's what's really, what I really wanted to say is that there are those who find that Windows is very good, and they can use Windows very well, and it's great. And then there are others of us who prefer the command line interface, and you know, now that there's a choice, I think people should be allowed to make a choice. Thanks.
Well, I hope you won't object if I play devil's advocate here for a second.
No, of course not.
The first thing I would say is that I'm using screen readers, particularly WindowEyes and JFW, on a daily basis. I think since 1.0 of WindowEyes, it has had a feature called Format Alert, which you can turn on, which will tell you when material is indented and by how much. And JFW introduced that in around about 3.5, I think, or 3.31, somewhere around there. So I'm not sure that it's correct to say that you can't get that kind of formatting information in a Windows-based environment.
Ah, now that's interesting. I think one of the other things that we're facing, okay, and this might be an issue that others might want to speak to, is the fact that many of us, especially those of us who have gotten our screen readers on our own, have had very little training in how to use them. I had no idea this was available. Now, of course, I'm terrible at reading manuals. Okay, and this is another learning difference, if you will, that I think is important to recognize. People just cannot read manuals, the information. When they read on something, and this is true of me, if we're shown something, then we know, you know, what it is, and then we can go back and read the manual and understand what we're doing. But I think a lot of us are lacking training in our screen readers, which may be a factor.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment, absolutely. The other point I would make is that it seems to me that the assumption you're making, or the theory that you're putting forward, is that you have to have a good grasp of visual things, of layout, to understand Windows. And I'm not sure if that's just a sort of a psychological issue, that blind people had such a scary time with Windows for so long that they think Windows, graphical, yuck, all graphics, yuck. But in fact, I actually believe it's possible, because of all the keyboard commands and the pull-down menus, to use Windows without even knowing that there are icons on the screen, really, without caring about that.
Well, I think that you may be right about that, Jonathan, except let me ask you this. And as a competent Windows user, I would assume that you have shortcuts that you use to get to the things on menus that you need to get to.
I'm not only a positive Windows user, it scares the heck out of me, the thought of having to go back to a disgusting command line. So, yeah, yes, I mean, obviously, for applications that I use regularly, I will assign shortcut keys to them. So, for example, I have Control-Alt-W for Word and Control-Alt-I for Internet Explorer and all of those things, sure.
Mm-hmm. No, but I mean, for instance, when I was using Windows on a regular basis, I tried several times to configure my Eudora mailing system, and I liked Eudora because I liked it much better than the MS Mail or whatever the heck it was, and I wanted to use it, but I also wanted to configure it for how I wanted it to work. I wanted to make folders and so forth and so on. And I found myself lost in a series of menus that, even though I had a tutorial, I did not understand what I was doing. I was so lost. I kept tabbing and tabbing and getting into things that I didn't know where I was, and I felt completely at sea. I couldn't understand what was going on. And then, when I got into Linux, for instance, and I started using VM, which is the mailer that comes with Emacs Speak, and I learned VM in about a day and a half. Okay? Maybe less than that. And the reason for that is that the commands are so easy. And you don't have to search for them on a menu. There's no searching for commands at all, except in the sense of you can go to a help screen and look for commands and so forth. But you don't have to actually move a cursor to find an item or anything like that, which I find is just great. I prefer it. In other words, if I type something in and it goes and does it, or else it gives me an error message, and I don't spend half my time searching for what I want to do.
Of course, the contrast to that is that, regarding your Eudora dialogue example, that I think that's just a case of coming to grips with conventions, that if you realize that you've got to hit escape to get out of a dialogue box or alt to get rid of a menu, at least the fact that you have those choices all nicely laid out for you in a menu or in a dialogue box means that you don't have to have some sort of amazing retentive memory to recall what the command is for something. I mean, I think back to even the Word Perfect 5 days, where you had all these combinations of the function keys and shift and alt, and, you know, if you didn't use a feature, you had to go and scramble for it, whereas now in Word, if you use a very little used feature once in a while, you just find it in the appropriate menu. My out of sight server, for instance, runs under Linux, and instead of having a lovely dialog box where I can configure my email settings for the server, the email server that we run, I have to go and edit these ridiculously long files like rc.local.custom, full of comments with number signs, and I have to uncomment certain lines and things like that, and it's just so sort of archaic and cumbersome, it bugs me.
But I would find if I knew how to edit it, because as I say, I'm not a techie. I am absolutely not a techie.
But see, I find it hard to believe, Anne, because I've heard so many times from people who say, yeah, Linux is okay if you want to get under the hood and get technical, and here you are saying that Linux is actually better for the non-techies than Windows is. So this is an interesting perspective.
Well, I think it really is, because, see, it has the same kind of ease that DOS had. Except that what you've got now is you have a modern system, and you know you're able to do things like listen to real audio and so forth and so on, and listen to Winamp and these types of things, and you have a fully functional modern system.
But was DOS ever easy, or is it just that we had to get familiar with it because that's all there was? I would say that the world of Windows has opened up the power of all sorts of applications for more blind people, because DOS was so cryptic that it alienated, it excluded less able blind people, and suddenly they've got power in their hands with Windows.
Well, as I say, I think that it is a difference in learning, in the way in which you learn, and the way in which you process information.
Well, I think you're right. So I just think it's wonderful to have someone on the line here whose argument is robust enough for me to challenge it robustly.
Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate all the time you're spending with me, you know, on the spur of the moment here. I think I should probably get off so other people can call in.
Well, I hope you've stimulated some debate, because I think that this, Linux trend is scary. But, I'm sure there'll be people who'll phone in and agree with you.
Well, as I say, I think that it is important because it gives choice. And in my mind, independence means choice. Are you there?
I'll just turn them off for a second, Dan, because we can't hear you over the top. There we go.
Oh, okay. As I was saying, I think my final comment is that the development of the screen readers for Linux has allowed choice. And choice means independence. And that's really about all I had to say. But thank you for giving me so much time.
That is a pleasure, Anne, and I really appreciate you calling. It's a fascinating conversation, and you've certainly got the calls coming in now.
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, thanks. Bye now.
Bye for now.
Well, we have quite a few people on the line. Let me just go through who we've got here. We've got... this is Blind Line on ACB Radio. We've got a call from area code 302. Hello there.
Hi, my name is Lynn Schneider.
Hello, Lynn. How are you? Nice to hear your voice.
Fine, thank you. Yes, it's a pleasure to speak with you tonight. Jonathan, I was wondering if I could just share something that I've been thinking about, and I'm not sure it's related to any topic that you're talking about tonight, but I had an experience where someone called me, a friend of mine called me, who was a friend of a coworker, and she was had received a note from a blind individual. She runs a small business,
right,
selling products for dogs, for pets. And she got a note saying that, requesting that she make her site more accessible. And it was interesting because I went to the site and I found it very accessible. So I was thinking about, and have been thinking about, when it comes to web accessibility, are we all on the same page about what accessibility means? You know, you see this on the mailing list all the time, where someone can use AOL just fine and someone else can't, or one screen reader can handle something that another can't. So as a webmaster, you know, how do you know exactly what is accessible to one person may not be to another?
I think you raise a really good point, Lynn. I think it's something that we've got to come to grips with a little better than we have. I have a real problem personally with the Bobby site because I think it sets such high standards, ridiculously high standards, unnecessarily high standards, yes, that when anybody gets there and in faith puts their website through, it is very difficult to get a score that says, oh, you can put on your page that you're Bobby approved. And most of the things are just pathetic, niggly nonsense. And the other problem we have is that some of us, and we all do it from time to time, use our tiredness, our personal inability to use the site, and we use inaccessible as a euphemism for that. Not that there's anything wrong with it, but just that we personally can't use it.
Yeah, and I think that's true. You know, with this particular site, you know, I even went through the motions of actually almost purchasing something from the site and actually going to the checking the shopping cart setup, and I found everything just very, very speech friendly, and yet, you know, this individual had a real hard time, and really, basically, you know, another challenge that I had was, she had asked me for some links that would help her out in terms of making her site more accessible. And, you know, now she's not a professional webmaster. She's just a basic, you know, business person who has set up her website using something like Frontpage or, you know, whatever. And one of the challenges I had was that I was trying to find a site that was just very straightforward for someone who is not a professional webmaster about what accessibility is. And I just really had a tough time finding a straightforward, simple guide. And one of the most helpful things that I recommended was that she turn off graphics and try to you know, navigate her website. I think that's one of the biggest and simplest things that we can tell sighted people.
At a very fundamental level, the issue is really alt tags, isn't it? Alt tags for everything.
Absolutely. And when she turned off graphics, she did realize, you know, what the issues were, you know, for people using screen readers. And so I just think that before we make laws about web accessibility, I just think we need to stop and say, what is accessibility? And, you know, like I said, there are blind people out there who use AOL and seem to have no trouble at all, whereas I am not sure that, you know, I'm sure I could do it, but it's certainly not a comfortable interface. I mean, but, so that was my other thing. And if I could make just one more quick comment about the merger between HJ and Blazy. One of the things that struck me, I have the press release in front of me, and it mentioned this Richard Chandler.
Yeah.
And also these two companies that are pumping, you know, some capital into the venture. I have never heard of these two companies, and I've never heard of Mr. Chandler. So this has me sort of intrigued. I mean, you know, I've been on the net for years, and I've never seen this name before.
Now, this guy is a newbie to this particular part of the disability market, and what you have is somebody who's come out of nowhere, at least to the average consumer, and bought two of the leaders in our industry. I mean, it's phenomenal.
Yes, it is, and I guess my big concern is, does this individual or do these individuals, you know, have a clue when it comes to blindness? I think we have to give them the benefit of the doubt. We have to give the whole thing the benefit of the doubt. But I just wonder, you know, since I've never heard these names. And also, one of the things that mentioned in the press release that had me concerned was the fact that they wanted to acquire companies that focus on other disabilities. Products that focused on other disabilities outside of blindness, like such as, you know, for the learning disabled community. And I think that's fine, except that I'm thinking of the example of TSI, which started out being a company that manufactured things for blind people, you know, the Opticon being their flagship product. Well, then when they got into the low vision market, they realized that the blindness products were not as lucrative, and so they sort of dumped them. And I guess my concern is that we will kind of, the bottom line will rule here, and, you know, I mean, when you think of Ted Henter and Dean Blasey, they got into it because of a love for it, because of a passion for it. Will the people running the company now have that same passion, or will they be looking at, you know, just dollar signs? I mean, these are just my concerns.
Interesting thoughts, and thanks very much for sharing them. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Okay, bye now. This is ACB Radio Blindline. I'm Jonathan Mosen. Let's take this call. Good evening to you.
Yes, Jonathan. This is Chris Collins in Newport Beach, California.
Hi, Chris. Good to hear from you.
How you doing?
I'm just fine, thanks.
Oh, great. I just really want to congratulate you. I was really amazed that on Sunday night I tuned everything in, and I, you know, Mr. Murphy didn't rear his ugly head. Everything just seemed to go so smoothly. I was just amazed. I really was so delighted that everything went so smoothly.
So was I. I tell you what, I haven't been so nervous in years. As a real military operation, precision timing.
Yeah. You know, it's very interesting, the comments that people have been making. One of them about Linux and Windows. And I think that we see it a little bit the same in terms of, I've been a JAWS user since 1996, and of course I was a DOS user before that, and I just have never had to do much visualization on Windows because the JAWS screen reader kind of does it for me. You know, the only concepts that I kind of had to get a handle on that were a little bit visual were the concepts of icons, of minimizing the screen, I mean, minimizing things and maximizing things and what happens to that. But other than that, I, you know, it's almost been a very transparent sort of thing. And I just don't feel like I've had to think about Windows in a very visual way because JAWS has kind of helped me do that.
Would you want to go back to using DOS or some sort of command-driven operating system?
You know, it's interesting you say that. I work for a company that bought me a Braille light, and the only thing that I use my Braille light for is when I take notes. I'm a customer service rep for a cell phone company, and I have to write down phone numbers and all that. And the only thing that I've almost used the Braille light for is to have a quiet Brailler. If you know what I mean, so that my sighted colleagues aren't hearing a Brailler clacking away, but the Braille light is very complicated to use because it's so command driven, and I just haven't really gotten into using it that much, you know, because of that, and when I go to Windows, and sit down and am able to use, you know, Windows gives you the best of both worlds, because with the keyboard commands you can do hotkeys like Alt H for help or whatever, but if you forget you can go up and down a menu. And so when I contrast my use of Windows with the Braille life, you know, there's no doubt, you know, what that I really like the idea of having menus.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much for phoning, Chris. We've got another call on the line who's been holding for some time, so we better get to them.
Okay, great to talk to you, and I'm sure we'll do it soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye for now. You're with ACB Radio Blindline, I'm Jonathan Mose, and you may also want to give us a call and talk about exactly whether radio reading services have had their day. You heard Phil Troll trying to set up a radio for the print impaired in the UK. If you were giving advice to him, would you say, yeah, you need a radio reading service, or go for something electronic? Interested in your thoughts on that. Let's go to this call, though. Hi, thanks for holding.
Hello, is this Jonathan?
This is Jonathan. That sounds
Hello.
Like Colin.
It is indeed. Recognise the voice, mate.
Yeah, sorry to keep you on hold on toes for so long there, Colin.
No problem. I was trying to work out how to use this this thing. It's I misread when you said do control, what was it? Something, shift, and C or something.
But what?
It's the title bar, isn't it?
Oh, if you're in Jaws, you just hit insert
yeah.
T to get the telephone number.
Yeah, I got that. But the problem was trying to read it while I was listening to the program.
Ah, because you've got software speech, I guess.
I'm afraid I have, yes.
All right.
Good old Eloquent. I mean, he doesn't do a bad job, as you heard on Sunday, but he's not the best in the world, is he? Phil gave a little bit of wrong information about the CNA UK CD-ROM that they issue. It's £90 a year, and you get a CD-ROM every week, which contains weekly papers, daily papers, quarterlies if there are any, monthlies. It also contains a selection from the Project Gutenberg books, and it contains a Read It program, and it contains a thing called Watson, which is a CNA UK program written to assist you with accessing the satellite and radio and TV guides and what have you.
Gosh, that sounds like an incredibly good deal.
It is, actually. And this, I must be perfectly honest, I do not really have time to go through. There's so much stuff. It's just unbelievable. Now, how much you can get onto a CD, it's just unbelievable. It's all text documents, but they've all got doc extensions, so you can actually use a word processor. We are actually looking for somebody to write a Windows front end to enable us to read it, rather like the DOS Read It program. So, David Justice, if you're listening to this, come on, mate. Let's have a Windows version of Read It. You could do with it.
I actually do agree with that. I've had David on about this before and said to him, you know, we could actually do with a Windows version of Read It.
Yes, it would certainly be beneficial. I was also interested in what, was it Anne Parsons?
Yeah.
Was saying just now about the Opticon. We've had a lot of controversy in the UK about Opticon because I've got a lot of people who use it and rely on it very, very much. What in fact could replace it? Because how could you scan, for instance, a label on a tin? Okay, you've got barcode readers coming in, but they're still very much in their infancy. Is there one that an ordinary person can just sort of buy and wave at a tin and be able to read what the contents is and all the rest of it?
Haven't you ever put a bottle of wine on the scanner?
Yeah, how do you do that sort of thing?
It's
impossible.
I think we might be having a bit of an earthquake here, but it seems I think we're having an earthquake.
An earthquake?
Yeah, I believe we are, but hang on, I think it's stopping, so I won't, we seem to be right now.
Oh, gracious, how far away are you from an earthquake zone? Wellington.
So this is incredibly disconcerting. I think we...
You are actually moving.
Yeah, yeah.
We're actually moving.
Yeah, but I think it stopped again. Anyway, that's fine. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be distracting you there.
No problem. Well, it's the first time we've ever had an earthquake last. Well, it's good enough to hear anything. At least I can, not through the phone. I am recording this program. Now, can you tell me, the the Blindline will be archived in due course, won't it?
Well, what will happen is that Blindline will be run on the cycle on the ACB radio mainstream until 1 GMT tomorrow, and then after that it will go in the archives in the shows on demand section under Blindline.
Yeah, I see. Now, Does that mean that the whole program, including the listener participation bits, archived, or is it just the actual interview part?
As of now, it does mean that the listener participation gets archived. Yes, it's all part of our new and improved service here.
Yeah. Well, I'm good. That's fine then. So, we did get a bit of breakup during the... in fact, at one point, I'm using your tuner, you know, the ACB tuner?
Oh, yes.
At one point, it jumped out of the stream and jumped onto the old farm radio stream. I don't really understand why.
Happen if for some reason, a little bit under the weather, 24 hours, and the reason it loses the stream automatically within a 30-second period, but it will mean that it will take you to the next stream if that happens.
Ah, I see. Well, I tried to do a Z to go back, and it sort of did it grudgingly.
Well, there you go. Oh, very nice to hear from you, particularly since it's 25 to 4 in the morning right now.
Yeah. Well, I went to bed about 9 o'clock yesterday evening and set the alarm to go off at 5 to 2. So I just had time to get the system up, and as you were introducing, Phil.
Well, it's great to hear from you, and always good to hear from our friends in the UK. Oh, incidentally, you might like to spread the word on any UK chat lists that you are on, that I'm not, and I'm not on any UK chatty lists, ACB Radio has secured reports for the Tri Nations cricket between Australia, this is blind cricket, between Australia, New Zealand and England, and that tournament starts on Saturday with a game between Queensland and England, and we will be carrying reports, you know, it's like after the match, reports on
this?
How that's going.
Where is this
going to
be? Is this in Australia? Where is it taking place?
What was that?
Where is it taking place?
In Queensland, Australia.
Oh, fine, so you're carrying a report. Oh, great, yeah, well. We'll look forward to that then, mate. I'll let you go. And thanks very much for all your time and trouble. Yes, it's been a very interesting programme.
Great, Colin. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Bye now.
Yeah, okay, cheers and all the best.
Here we go, that's Colin Howard calling all the way from the UK, and for the first time in quite a wee while, we have a free board of calls. So if you want to get straight on, phone now. I'll give you those telephone number details in case for some reason you're not getting them and you want to write them down. You dial a New York number, which is 212-812-2800. That number again, 212-812-2800, and then enter the PIN 10834173. That's 10834173, and you will get on the air here and talk to us at Blind Line. Area code 615. Good evening to you.
Good evening, Jonathan.
Who are we talking
to?
This
is Michael Killian.
Oh, very nice to hear you. How are you doing?
Oh, doing all right. You may recall we talked about the Braille Note some time back.
Yes, I recall that. You were going to tell us how you got on with the demo that you requested, I believe.
Yeah, I have not actually heard anything from them.
Well, that's not very good, is it?
No, it really isn't.
Well, that's very dodgy indeed. Well, I mean, I'm not sure if it's actually in production, but if that is in fact the case, you'd think that Humanware would have said to you, well, it's not in production yet, but what we're doing is we're taking the names of people who are expressing an interest and we'll get back to everybody. But if they haven't even done that, that's a real shame.
Yes, all the woman told me was that she'd have to call me back on it, but never did.
Oh, well. Are you going to give them another call and chase them up?
I think I'm going to call them up tomorrow and see what I can find out.
Oh, well, keep us posted on the saga. You tell them that you're going to ring Blind Line next week and tell the world what's happening.
Absolutely. Now, comment about Command Line versus Windows.
Yes, I'm sure you're a huge Windows fan.
I actually have preferred the Command Line over Windows because I found it to be actually faster. There are admittedly certain instances where Windows definitely makes things a lot faster, especially if you can say go to a program and just hit enter and go and access that program rather than having to type it in. But an example of an instance where Windows is very slow or fast, and that has to do with setting the time. To set the time and date in Windows, you have to go all these boxes and move your slider up and down for the month, the year, the date, day of the week, well, not quite day of the week, but time, time zone, all this other stuff. With DOS, all they have to do for the time is just type it in, wait for the top of the minute, and hit enter. In the case of the date, just type in the date and hit enter. It's a lot quicker that way.
Well, this is true, but I mean, how often do you set the time and the date, though, really?
Not too often, but I think that is just one example of how DOS, or Linux, for that matter, could be faster. I also have a big problem with Windows acting up like crazy. For example, I was trying to bring up the register editor yesterday, and I would only get to the G, and the stupid thing would dump me into either my desktop or my exploring my computer. I had to reboot the computer in order to get the stupid thing to actually work right.
Well, yes. I mean, it's hard to deny that. I mean, it's sometimes when something goes wrong with Windows, it's a real nuisance. But then I suppose it's because it's quite a complex operating system, though, isn't it? I mean, it's a very complicated piece of work.
Oh, it is definitely that. It is definitely that. And there are definitely a lot of things you can do with the programs that either you can't do in DOS, or if you could, it would be very complex to set up.
Yes.
They have all these little hidden features tucked 3 and 4 levels deep, and takes a long time to try and find some of those.
So, are you going to consider giving Linux a try?
Yeah, I have actually downloaded Linux, but so far I've not been able to unload it. I've tried doing that in the DOS box, and I don't have enough memory even to unzip the file.
No, you've got to shut right down to DOS. You know, go to the restart menu and choose restart the computer in MS-DOS mode. I must say that I want to make an informed decision about this, and so Matt Campbell very kindly compiled a version for me of ZipSpeak that he's put together. You know, Matt devotes a heck of a lot of time to assisting people with this, and when you get someone who believes in something as much as Matt does, it's pretty compelling, and he kindly put this together and sent it to me. Unfortunately, there's no Keynote driver, which is the external synth I have, for ZipSpeak yet. I'm sure it will come, so I haven't been able to try this Linux implementation yet, so I'm looking forward to doing that.
Maybe you can answer a question for me. I've been, whenever I try to got a little interference there, whenever I try to restart in MS-DOS mode, I get a problem with the screen showing nothing but ASCII 255 and nothing speaking. The programs work just fine, but nothing talks. Any guesses as to why and how I might fix that?
Whereabouts are you when this happens?
This is restarting in MS-DOS mode.
Oh, yeah. I seem to recall something about that. I think it has something to do with a mode command, but somebody will know for certain, so I won't give you wrong information, because there's still time for someone to ring up and help out. I've just got another call on the line, so I better deal to that before we have to close ourselves down.
Okay.
Have a good evening.
Back on the internet in a few minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Catch you
bye
later. Bye bye now.
Hello there.
Hi, this is Jonathan. How are you doing?
Hello, this is. Got to get used to that noise. Mike in San Francisco, Mike Gorman.
Well, it's very nice to hear from you. How are you this fine evening?
Thank you. No, I'm fine. I'm using one of these 3 cents a minute long distance service. I don't know what area calls it. Shell.
It actually shows that your number is blocked. I couldn't tell where you were calling from.
Okay, I didn't know how that worked on there. I have one of those other long distance companies that lets you call in California, and it actually does show a phone number because I call up Joy once in a while, and she knows it's me, even though I'm not calling. You know, it doesn't show my number. Anyway,
I should mention the star of the next main menu program.
Yes, I know. And that's going to be on Sunday night, or?
That's right, Sunday night, 9 to 11 Eastern. That's Monday, 1 to 3 GMT. And we have a really interesting segment coming up with Mike here. We've got Steve Wolfe and Kevin Miner all talking about personal broadcasting and how you too can be a worldwide DJ. And we're going to find out about three of the best blind people in the business and how they make it all happen. So we're looking forward to your participation in that segment about web broadcasting.
And if I can do it, anybody can do it. Anyway, I just wanted to commend. Yeah, well, I'm enjoying your service quite a bit. I finally got. I also like that tuner idea on your webpage.
Oh, well, thanks.
You know, where you can download the tuner and get it from that.
It makes it quite easy for people to just sort of tune into whatever they want to do, and, yeah, we hope it helps.
Yeah, I think so. I might even try it out of mine somehow. The only problem I'm having, I don't know if it's common lately, with Live 365, with real audio, it seems to, like on mine, it seems to play my song, and then when the song's over, it doesn't play the next one.
Yes.
And I got an email from somebody who got in that. Of course, I'm using EasyCast.
Well, we are too,
you know,
for most of the time. And we urge
yeah.
people to consider very strongly switching to Winamp.
Which is what I did.
The issue, I understand, relates to a bug in RealPlayer's MP3 decoder that they use, which causes it to choke on the ID3 tag. So every time a song starts and it has an ID3 tag of some description, it throws a wobbly.
Ah, okay, because I've only noticed it in the past week, and I'd lost my DSL until yesterday. I was without it. I just got me a new computer and didn't have the cable hooked up right for my DSL, so I finally got it back up, so I haven't checked it until yesterday. But anyway, I just basically wanted to commend you, and I'm getting interested in Linux because I have this old 166 machine that I'm going to decide to play with Linux on it and keep my other one running Windows, so... I guess I was going to ask if anybody knew of any, for new people, how to find out about Linux or where to go. And I know about Speak Up a little bit. I didn't know about the other one that lady mentioned. I just wondered if it was like a mailing list or a group or something regarding Linux. And
yeah, there's one called Linux Newbie that is run by Matt Campbell. And he...
Is that an e-group?
Yeah, it's an e-groups one, and he runs that. It's quite a busy list, he tells me, and that's for people getting into Linux. If you're interested in Emacs speak, there is an interview in the Blindline archives with TV Raman, who wrote that, and you might be able to hunt that down.
I'll check that one out.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, well, I appreciate
it. But anyway, I know you got another caller.
Yeah, it's one of the good things about the system. Everybody knows it.
And it's working fine. There's a slight delay, but I expected that.
Yeah, that's the internet telephony for you. We'll look forward to hearing your interesting story on Sunday evening, US time.
Tomorrow. Well, I'll call him tomorrow, right, on Monday.
That's right,
Sunday
we're
going
to do the recording.
Okay, well, good luck, Jonathan. And, yeah, right. And everybody have a good evening and or day, whichever it is up there. And good luck on the earthquake. I'm in San Francisco, and we get a lot of them here, so I know what it's like.
Excellent. Thanks very much. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Bye. This is ACB Radio Mainstream. Jonathan Mosen. We've got about 5 minutes to go. And thanks to our friends at Spiderphone for providing the communications facilities. Let's go to this call. Hello, this is Blindline.
Hello, Jonathan. Richard from New York.
How are you, Richard?
Not bad, Jonathan. You know what I wish about this merger, though, between Blazing and Hunter Joyce? I kind of wish it would have they would have merged with someone like Kurzweil, because lately I'm having a problem between Kurzweil and Jaws kind of giving my computer a little trouble.
Why don't you just exit Jaws?
I'm sorry?
Why don't you just quit Jaws before you start Kurzweil 1000?
Yeah, that's what I have done. I actually put it in before, up until I think I was using 3.5, and then I went to 4.5 with Kurzweil. And it seems like ever since I've gone into upgraded to 4.5, it seems like Jaws isn't happy with Kurzweil. So yes, I've had to do that. But I find that a little bit annoying. It would be nice if it would have been all integrated rather than having for different systems.
Yeah, I don't think there's any chance of Freedom Scientific getting its hands on the Kurzweil 1000 products somehow, because, of course, Kurzweil was recently bought out by Lennart and Housby, and I would say they're pretty safe and secure in that little bit of industrial relations there. But I'm interested, isn't it just a case of putting Jaws into sleep mode, or is it more complicated than that?
Well, in the past, that's all I did, was put Jaws into sleep mode, and Kurzweil was happy, but it seems like I'm using Jaws 3.5, 2.5. I haven't gotten any of the patches. And it just seems like they're not happy with each other, because I heard some grinding with my disk drive, but once I unload Jaws and load Kurzweil, it seems to be a much happier computer, but I am a little annoyed that with these upgrades that has happened when it didn't happen in the past.
Goodness me, have you tried contacting HJ Tech Support about that one, or Kurzweil Tech Support?
Yeah, I'm going to do that tomorrow because I basically was doing some troubleshooting just to find out because I'd also just recently upgraded to Windows 98 and just wanted to be sure because that seems to be working fine.
Yeah, you know, these products coexisting is a real mission, you know. It's quite a thing getting them all working together. And I suppose somebody, if we had the time, which we probably don't because we need it at the end of the show, would ring in and say, ah, well, yeah, that's Windows for you, you see. I am interested in how well these products all coexist under Linux, except that there isn't that much adaptive technology out there for Linux yet. So I guess it's difficult to make that comparison.
I was just curious about Linux. Is it able to use, because I understand there are some hardware and software that it can't do. Can it use scanners, or is that one of the things it can't do?
Yeah, it's something. I mean, obviously, I encourage people to listen to Matt Campbell's Linux discussions on Main Menu because he's dealing with a lot of these questions and is hoping to give a bit of a demo. I've got to squeeze one more call in before we end the show, Richard, so I have to leave it at that, and we'll talk with you next week.
All right, take care, Jonathan. Good show.
Thanks very much. Okay, this is Blind Line. One last call. Oh, what an interesting area code. Area code 666. Are you for real?
Actually, it should be 660.
Oh yes, I see. That your first number starts with a 6. I'm sorry. Yep, it's 660. That's much better. Right. I didn't think the US would assign anyone to area code 666. Who've we got there?
My name is Jamie Pauls.
Hi, nice to hear from you.
I really enjoy your programming so far. I have a real quick question about the music programming. As a musician, I play the piano, and I'm curious about two things. One is, what is the best way to submit material to the radio station? And secondly, be possible in the future to look at the title bar of Winamp and see what song is actually playing.
Well, the first thing is, yes, if you go to the support section of the ACB radio site, I think it goes into some detail on one of our pages about how to do it, but essentially you FTP the information using anonymous FTP to ftp.outofsite.org.nz, and you put the files in MP3 format in the incoming directory if you have access to an MP3 encoder. Otherwise, you can just contact us and we'll give you the postal address because we're always in for new material. We have certainly been on to Live365 about your second point, the title streaming. The one way that we can do it is if you go to our website and choose to listen to the ACB Radio Cafe with Live365, there's a new link that appeared there as of yesterday, there's a playlist window that comes up and it shows you the last three songs that we've played, including the current one that is playing, but we really want to get that in the title bar, and Live365 say they're working on it.
Okay. I think it's just really exciting, the service that you are doing. I think it would be an awesome article for our mainstream magazine like PC World or PC Computing to, you know, pick up on and do.
Yeah, I think ACB's publicity people might be working on that, so I hope that comes to fruition. I'm sorry to cut you short, Jamie, but we've got to fly, but I hope to hear from you again. It's nice to have a new caller coming in.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Jamie, bye now. There you go, that's it for Blind Line for this week. And I like that noise. Thanks very much to Spiderphone for making the technology available for us to do this. And we'll be back tomorrow, of course, at 9 Eastern. That's 1 GMT. Michael Loff is on ACB Radio with Handy Talk. I'm sure he'll have another very exciting program to present to us. And what else can I tell you? Oh, lots more to come. So watch our schedule page, and we'll keep you informed as to exactly what's happening here. I wish I knew what was happening because I'm just trying to end the program in a dignified way. Anyway, that's it from Blind Line for this week. We'll catch you next week and stay tuned to ACB Radio. Bye-bye for now.